It's easy to get lost. This is The Revenue Maze, and I'm Valerie Cobb. Join me as we navigate the halls, dead ends, and U-turns on your path towards upward growth trajectory. The Revenue Maze is sponsored by Revenue North Star, guidance and execution through fractional revenue leadership, uncovering hidden revenues, and empowering small business growth through process-driven sales customized to your company environment. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another great episode of The Revenue Maze. I have an amazing guest, and I always love to kind of pull out some excellent things that are maybe not as well known. This person has definitely been climbing high mountains. He has a superpower when it comes to building channels, and also just an amazing human to begin with, but he's an international speaker, a best-selling author of the Guiding Your Raft, and he is chairman of My Hive Global. Welcome, Dano.
Thank you, Valerie. It's wonderful to be here. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Yes, and you and I've had a couple of little moments of issues, but before we get started in this whole thing, because I'm laughing at myself for this, before we get started, the listeners would love to hear the answer to one question we always ask on the show, which is, what is one thing that you can tell listeners and viewers that will help them get out of the revenue maze?
BOD. That's my acronym, B-O-D. And basically, it's three steps. One is you have to baseline. Where are you? You know, how do you do that? You do it through audits, through advisors, through other things. Second is then you find the one thing that's going to make the biggest impact. And then the third is the D, do it. And then you go through that cycle again. BOD. That's my magic answer. How to get out of the maze.
And it's so concise, especially coming out of this. So getting out of the maze, let's start and give some practical ways that small companies, because you know that this audience is mostly small businesses. So what are some tips? I get it. It's BOD. Give us a little more.
I think the best way to do that is I was asked by some VCs to come in and grow a company they had invested in. They had invested $7 million, and in 4 months, they had burned through $4 million, and no difference. They were losing vast amounts of money. In fact, they were burning $2 million a quarter, and their revenues were about $800,000 a quarter, and their margins were about around 8% per quarter. And so they dropped me in with $3 million left in the investment, said, go grow this. And I jumped in and I said, we need to turn this around is what we need to do. So the first thing I did was I spent a couple of weeks just baselining. Where are we? What's working? What's not? Where are all the expenses? Where is the revenue and where's the potential revenue? So I baselined it. And today I would do it a little different. I would actually hire someone to help me baseline it, because a lot of times it's easier to see what the problems are when you're not in the middle of them. It's like the person in the helicopter flying over the maze saying, hey, you know what? If you make a left up here, you'll get out a lot faster. So that baselining is so important. And I love the audits we have today. There's a lot of other ways to figure out where are you. So we baselined it. And then the second thing is I had to decide, okay, of all the challenges and problems and issues, what is the one thing that would make the biggest difference? And the truth was finding a mega customer, someone who could grow the revenue fast enough and substantially enough that would give us time to work on the other problems. And so I targeted AT&T, and 4 months later closed that deal. And that made all the difference. Sure. And then, of course, that was part of the, once I discovered that, hey, find that one customer that's going to make the biggest difference, then I had to do it. And so it was all about execution after that. And we executed well, and then immediately went into baselining again. Okay, now we have revenue, but our expenses are still out of control. Our margins are out of control. Let's go focus on margins because that will have the biggest impact on the expenses. And so I started negotiating with contract manufacturers and working on all of the issues, everything that went into the cost of the product. We were able to grow the margin from about 8% to 32% over the next couple months. So now, a year later.
Wait. I have to stop you because that's amazing. I don't know if people understand how amazing that is, but that's amazing. Okay, go ahead.
Well, it was a crazy time. But at the end of the year, we flipped it. So the revenue was now $2 million a quarter. Expenses were $800,000 a quarter, and the margins were 32%. And it made all the difference. But it started with baselining and then finding the one thing and then focusing on that and just doing it. And then doing that again and then again and then again. And that's how we got out of the maze.
Well, you know, Dano, that is not as easy. I mean, you make it sound very easy, but finding the one. Let's talk about finding the one. That takes a superpower in and of itself. And a lot of times these small businesses, you're talking about venture capitalists. That's great. So maybe there's some inroads to that. But a lot of these small businesses, you know, it's their CEO or their founder trying to run around and schlep sales and figure it out. And I don't think it's as simple as it, you know, hey, just go find the one. Talk about that a little bit.
No, as I always tell my employees, you know, there's a lot of right ways to do things, but there's also some wrong ways. And my job is to make sure you don't choose the wrong ways. But, okay, you know, you choose the right way that feels best to you and go, and I'm there to support you. And the same thing is true here. We could have started with margin and, you know, we would have been good. And then once the margin was fixed, that helps fix the expenses and then gone after the revenue. But I knew the revenue was the longer stick in the tent. And so that's why we chose that. There were probably many right one things to focus on. But the key is when you pick one, then exactly do that. Focus on it, do it, and accomplish that. And then you're ready to look at the next one because there could be multiple right answers. And they're not always crystal clear. So at some point, you just have to use your gut and say, okay, this is the one we're going to focus on. Let's go do it.
Yeah, that's a... And you can only focus on really, I mean, we know every 90 days you kind of reset yourself and you can really only do a couple of things well at a given time. But I love that you talk about working on the revenue. You chose revenue first because one of the things that has been going over on the internet, and it was in a recent post, you know, in economic downturns, why do CFOs always try to cut marketing and sales or the revenue teams? And I was laughing at the post just a little bit because, you know, of course, it's going to bring up all the marketing and sales people. Yeah, why are they cutting? Why are they cutting? Right. And I had two fabulous CFOs that they're like, in a downturn, invest in revenue. You can't do anything. You can't cut margins if you can't get revenue coming in, right? And yeah. And so sometimes they get that bad rap. And so I'm curious, you know, your thoughts around, you know, focusing on that revenue instead of choosing margin first.
Yeah, it turns out the revenue piece really helped support the margin piece, because when I was able to take the contract, the signed contract with AT&T to my contract manufacturers, their eyes lit up and said, oh, okay, yeah, let's go ahead and start talking about how we can do more for less. And so for me, you know, when you have the revenue in hand, when you have that contract, even if you haven't even started executing against it, that's powerful. Whether you're trying to get maybe a bridge loan, whether you're trying to raise money or just fix your margins or your costs, having that massive PO in your hand or a collection of POs in your hand, it makes all the difference. One of the things that, as I've worked with entrepreneurs over the years, one of the biggest challenges is they have a great product and it's really cool. I mean, I've seen the most innovative, yeah, awesome things on the planet. The real question comes down to, is someone actually willing to open up their wallet and put money on the table in an exchange for the problem you're solving? And many times the shiny objects are amazing and really cool, but at the end of the day, people don't want to pay for it. The pain is not big enough for them to actually open up their wallets. And so focusing on revenue also teaches you about your product and your company and your mission and everything else, because if people aren't willing to buy what you're offering because it doesn't fix a pain that is big enough that they're willing to spend money on, then nothing else really matters.
And, you know, it kind of comes from a little bit from the roots of, well, you're Sandler, right? You've got, we'll talk about that another time, but we all know one of my mentors was Sandler, and we taught, and he stumped an entire sales team when he came in to train him. And he asked the question, you know, why do people buy? And he comes back and the team, well, because they need it, because they da-da-da-da-da, you know, and then it went on, and it's sometimes they don't even know they need it, right? And right. So, and he comes back and he says, for their reasons. And not, you know, and it's stumping, but nobody's going to open their wallet if there isn't a reason there for them to open the wallet, first of all, right? And it makes it easier if there's enough promotion out there to say, you know, here, open your wallet because there's this wonderful thing that could help your life. You know, I was reminded by a marketer again. I mean, I'm sure you've read the book, Start With Why by Simon Sinek. And I won't even get into the fact that that was a long time, way before Simon Sinek. But anyway, the golden circle, but, you know, it really does start with the alignment of their why and your why. And if your why isn't there and it's not the same or the need, right, then yeah, you're probably not going to sell.
In my book, by the way, the entire title of my book, which really helps, it's not actually about rafting down a river, but I use that as the idea because it evokes the emotions that actually go through people's mind. They go through calm waters in running their business, and then they hit the tumultuous waters. And if they haven't been preparing during the calm waters, the tumultuous waters can sink the raft. And so that's what my book is about, is my experiences in building and growing businesses of all types. And so the title is actually Guiding Your Raft, 17 Lessons in Leadership to Safely Guide Your Business Through Calm and Tumultuous Waters. And speaking of the pain, I actually have a chapter where I talk about Norman Vincent Peale. He's the author of The Power of Positive Thinking. So, mm-hmm. You know, pretty old stuff. But in there, he said something important. He said the six most important words in a salesperson's vocabulary and in a business owner's vocabulary should be find a need and fill it. And that talks to the pain. Well, I've changed those six words. And what I say in the book, I have my book right here.
Yeah. I was going to bring up the book, but go ahead. No,
it's find the pain and heal it. And that's what will make all the difference, is finding the pain and healing it. And of course, you don't find the pain by talking about your speeds and feeds and features and benefits. You find the pain by listening to the customer or the prospect.
Yeah. I like that. So yeah, find the pain and heal it, because that really, the other thing is the pain in change management. We know that the pain of same has got to be greater than the pain of change. We say this all the time, and then people like new to revenue, it becomes a tongue twister, right? They're like, wait, what? The pain of same has to be greater than the pain of change. And so if it's a nice to have, you're going to have a lot harder time healing that pain because they just put up, you know, it's like you're in a race and you might have a pebble in your shoe and you'll leave it there because you don't want to lose the race and you'll just keep going. Right. I mean, it's like, off we go running, you know, and then it's at the end, you've got this sore in your foot and you're like, yeah, but I wanted to win the race. So I kept that pain there. Right. If it was a boulder and stopped you in the race, you would have immediately gone, I got to stop because I can't get going any further. Right. So
right.
I just love, so let's get a little bit into guiding your raft and I'll let you do the behemothly long subtitle to it. Right. But anyway, cause it is, I mean, it explains what your book is about. Right. And then just kind of, What put you in a place that had you want to write a book, first of all? Because I'm thinking, I tell people on the show that I have a book, I have the title, I have the whole nine yards, but I just haven't gone over that edge. So what put you in that mode that said, hey, I'm going to write a book?
It's interesting story how that came about. And it's not a 30-second answer. So I'll elaborate. Basically, I grew up focusing on marketing. Now, always have done sales because sales and marketing to me go hand in hand. Yeah. But I always prided myself in being a strong marketer. Working at Adobe for years, working at a printer company for years, you know, marketing is king. And so it must have been around 2004, 2005 when social media took over, I realized that my marketing skills were out of date. So I said, okay, I'm going to start a social media company, write some books around social media so that I could learn social media. And so I did. And of course, as part of that, writing blogs is essential. It keeps your websites fresh and it keeps the search engines looking for new content, all of those things, plus valuable content for all of your audience. And so I started writing blogs. And of course, the first time you sit down and write a blog, what do I write a blog about, right? Yeah. And so the only thing I could think of is, well, my business experiences. So I started writing a lot of blogs about different experiences I had over the years in my career. And then, you know, I went on to do something else and they just sat there. And then one day my wife said, why don't you put those into a book? And I thought, well, that sounds fun. So during my over 3 million miles of flying that I've done over the last 15 years, I would expand on those blogs and turn them into chapters and then turn the chapters into a book and handed it to a few good people that I knew would give me a real review of it, not just a, hey, family and friends, you're great, you know? Hey. And they said, you know what, Dano, you actually have something here. It's great, but you need to add more. So I said, okay, I've got a couple more trips to India and China planned. So I wrote some more chapters and then I tied it all together under the Guiding Your Raft umbrella. And I was so excited when I was able to hand it to my editor who went through and cleaned up all my bad English and made things clear, but still keeping it in my voice. That was important. And she handed it back to me and I read it and I just go, wow, I love this. And I was done because now I had everything documented. And my wife said, no, you're not stopping. You're going to publish. And I said, well, okay, I'll do it. So I'm going to publish it. But I'm so glad I did because so many people have read it and said, you know, just some great inspiring ideas in here. It's caused me to think differently about some of the problems I've been in front of. It's caused me to, you know, with some new ideas that generate better ideas. And so I'm really happy that it's accomplished what I'd hoped. It was just help other people see things maybe a little different.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And it you have documented amazing things that have gone on and it has helped it has helped people. I am a bit curious, and this is maybe a sidebar a little bit about that, but you know, you said, you know, I got mostly into marketing, Adobe, all of that kind of stuff. And, but it, your career definitely took different turns after that point, because I remember you talking about getting a tap on your shoulder for helping with a certain channel that, that kind of also is part of your storytelling. And, and, you know, some roots in Silicon Valley, which is a hot button right now, from things that are going on, all the way through being obviously an international speaker, but you're bilingual, or actually, I think maybe several languages. But anyways, tell us a little bit about what led you to the channel creation and all of that.
What a great question. And I always look back on my career. And even when I read my book now, I go, you did that?
I did that. When I read it, I was like, seriously, you're like Superman.
Well, I don't call myself that, but I am pretty amazed at some of the crazy things that I did. I graduated from college with a computer science degree and thought I was going to write code. And I got my first job and spent the day writing code and really learning systems and writing a few lines of code. And that night I found the marketing person. I said, hey, can I move over to your department? I don't think I can sit and write code all day, every day. And she laughed at me and she goes, you can help us with some. She goes, let me talk to the head of engineering in the morning. And so I walked in the next morning and she said, come on over here, Dana, we've got a desk for you in marketing. So I wrote some demo programs and did some other things, but it really got me excited about the process of bringing a product to market and how all that works. And included in that, of course, is when you look at the whole go-to-market plan, it's so comprehensive, touches on what's getting developed, how it's being positioned, who's the target audience, and how are you going to get the message to the target audience, and how are you going to get the product to the target audience? And so, and then of course, it even goes beyond that, right? So I got really intrigued by that entire process. So I did. I spent a lot of time in marketing. However, I was marketing products that were very technical. And so the sales guys would ultimately call me and say, Dano, we don't have any idea how to sell this, but we think we have a customer. Can we bring you into McDonnell Douglas? Can we bring you into these other big companies? And so I would go in and end up closing the business. And so I was always touching on sales. I went to Adobe and I was a product manager there over a complex product, and ended up being the guy who closed the business because it was a technical product. There's some fun stories in my book about how I closed the biggest deal in Adobe history to that point in time as a product manager. And salespeople wouldn't even touch the customer, wouldn't even talk to the customer until I had already got the deal 90% done. And so as a marketer, you have to always have a sales mentality. I tell people the best marketers have carried a bag. In other words, they've been out on the street selling, because they understand that messaging that you create in the boardroom or on the whiteboard doesn't always fly when you're standing in front of a customer. So at Adobe, one of my customers was Steve Jobs when he was at Next Computer. And so I got to know him and you know, had some negotiations with him. They were mild. They weren't crazy negotiations, little things. We ended up swapping engineers from time to time. He would take six of mine and I would take six of his to work on specific projects and things. But we had a good working relationship. And you also have to keep in mind, the Steve Jobs I knew is what they call Steve Jobs 2.0. Yeah. He wasn't the original Apple Steve Jobs. He now had realized that not everything works. Not everything goes the way planned. Next Computer was, you know, in many, many senses a failure, although there were some big wins out of it. And one of them was when he went back to Apple, he brought that multi-threaded, multi-processor operating system to Apple and really brought them back into the mainstream. Well, when he went back to Apple, he did have a lot of problems he had to deal with. And I got to follow him, especially when it had to do with the printer stuff, as he talked to all the different printer product managers and salespeople and the like. But then he asked me to go figure out what to do with his channel because it didn't seem to be producing. So I did a 6-week stealth operation where I was pretending like I was talking about this new product we had, but I was really just getting to know the channel and what's going on, what do they love, what do they hate. Well, I came back to Steve with some pretty bad news. I said, pretty much the channel hates you. All your products are stuffed on the bottom shelf, collecting dust.
You told Steve Jobs that.
Yeah. But again, remember, he was just getting back to Apple. So, you know, we both shared common disdain for some of the previous leadership that ran the company while he was gone. I told him that when someone did come in and ask him for an Apple product, they would immediately start switching them to an Intel-based product. And I said, that's the bad news. I said, but here's an idea. What would you think about opening your own stores? And let's start with opening Apple stores within existing electronic stores. At the time, Circuit City was big. Of course, now that would be a Best Buy.
Yeah.
And staffing it with Apple employees and making it the Apple brand. So when someone walks into the store, it's the Best Buy, but all of a sudden there's this beautiful display that's all Apple. And you rent the space from them, you put the employees in, you create the brand, it's all Apple. And he just lit up. And I said, and then eventually, of course, you can do your own Apple, standalone Apple stores. And he said, that's great. And my job as a consultant was done at that point. I mean, I gave him some of the business plan and things like that, but my job was over. So I like to just keep it simple that I inspired Steve Jobs to launch the now $60 billion a year Apple stores.
Yes. And if anybody has ever met Dano, he's extremely humble, and it is true. And he was probably feeling a bit awkward when I asked that question, but at the end of the day, it's a fascinating story, and it feels like a bit of a small world, really, in that realm. So anyways, Dano, super exciting things going on. You've got your book, you've got, you've helped multiple companies, you've had unicorn IPO, you've had several things that have gone on in your life. Why chief revenue officer? Why that at this time in your life? What's going on with that? Let's talk about it a little bit. I always ask that question. Why? Or fractional chief revenue officer. And what's the difference between fractional chief revenue officer? And you've talked about marketing, you've talked about sales. Why not a chief marketing officer? Why not? You know, I'm just curious. And I know that this is all unscripted. So you're going to go, okay.
No worries at all. And in my career, I've been a CEO, I've been a chief marketing officer, I've been a chief revenue officer, although we didn't really call it that years ago. I've been head of products. I've even run development teams. The one thing I have not ever been and never want to be is a chief financial officer.
Oh, me too.
I obviously can read the numbers and actually generate numbers, but I do not want to do that every day. I've been responsible for quite a bit and had a lot of experience across the board. And as I stepped back and started looking at the different roles that are now evolving, because now there's chief experience officers, there's retention, there's a lot of new roles, which are really important when you think about the new buyer journey that exists today that didn't exist 20 years ago, didn't exist 10 years ago, didn't even exist 5 years ago. This new buyer journey is different. And I wanted to be able to touch all pieces of that buyer journey. And the one title other than CEO that touches all of that is the chief revenue officer, because the chief sales officer or VP of sales literally is focused on the sales team, sales management, making the numbers. And that's critical, a critical role.
Yes.
The chief marketing officer needs to work hand in hand with the head of sales to make sure that the messaging's right, that the tools are in place so that they can actually go out and promote and sell a product and generate leads. But it starts earlier than that to have success. It starts back at what are we developing and for who? And that's really the products team, the product chief product officer. Yeah. And so as a chief revenue officer, you touch and work closely with the chief product officer. You work closely with the chief marketing officer. You work closely with the chief sales officer. You work closely with the finance team to make sure that it all comes together the way it needs to. And that's why I love the role of chief revenue officer, because it is an umbrella role, yet as a fractional, you get to actually roll up your sleeves and get your hands dirty by actually executing on some of the ideas you bring to the table. Whereas, you know, consultants, they're great. They bring good ideas to the table. Coaches help motivate and keep people on focus, but they don't roll up their sleeves and do the work. And I actually have a problem when I ask like Steve Jobs to go do this. And then I was kind of done and it's like, but I want to do it.
I want to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. But he already had a great team that knew what they were doing, which is fabulous. But that's why I love the idea of fractional, because I can roll up my sleeves. And it's why I love the idea of chief revenue officer, because I have worked in all those departments and have done all of that. And I can bring it all together and make sure that everyone is on the same page.
Yeah, it's that alignment that is so critical, especially in the small business realm for sure, right? Because, you know, under 500 million, it can be chaotic for sure, right? So anyways, it has been a fascinating conversation. Every time I talk to you, I learn so much more, and I always feel so humbled, period, to be learning about all the things that you have taught us today. And even though we started with BOD, we ended up with so many other key necessary types of information that help, especially in this time in a company's culture and history, right? So I always ask everybody, it's like, where is one place that they can get a hold of you, Dano?
They can go to my website, which is danoibarra.com. So my first name, my last name.com.
Awesome. Awesome. And as with anything else, I'm so grateful that you decided to be on this show today, because it is exactly geared for those listeners. The topics was geared for the listeners, and I just loved it. So thank you again. And thank you to all the listeners. If you liked it, loved it, go to Dano's website, LinkedIn, wherever, like this podcast and let us know other topics that you'd like to hear. So anyways, thank
Valerie,
you again, Dano.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed the conversation and look forward to more.
Thank you all for joining another great episode. Hats off to all you small businesses out there. I can't wait for the next episode.